Welcome to Native America Calling. From Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. For some bookstore owners, 2020 and the pandemic meant closing their doors permanently, shifting operations online, and accommodating local COVID-19 safety protocols. Despite the setbacks, a new Native-owned bookstore opened recently, and a number of others continue to keep the lights on. Coming up, we'll check in with a couple of Native bookstore owners about how business is doing and why their stores are important. Join us after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal advocates are praising President Joe Biden's quick action to reverse the last administration's environmental policies. The Mountain West News Bureau's Savannah Marr reports.
On Inauguration Day, Biden took steps to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord. His administration also placed a 60-day moratorium on new leasing and drilling permits on public lands. Biden has also fulfilled campaign promises that were important to tribes, including revoking a permit for the Keystone XL pipeline.
I think there's a sense of vindication, recognition of treaty promises.
Matthew Campbell is an attorney with the Native American Rights Fund who fought that project on behalf of tribes in Montana and South Dakota. Campbell also represented tribes in the Four Corners region in their lawsuit opposing the previous administration's shrinking of Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments, a move Biden has pledged to reconsider.
I think it's a very important first step. It's an important signal that tribal sovereignty will be recognized.
The fossil fuel industry is likely to be among Biden's biggest detractors. His climate change plan aims to achieve net zero emissions in the U.S. by 2050. For National Native News, I'm Savannah Marr.
Reporting for this story is part of a collaboration between National Native News and the Mountain West News Bureau. Native American tribes praised the Biden administration this week for issuing an executive order stopping the Keystone XL pipeline, but now they're urging additional action to halt other pipeline projects, including the Dakota Access Pipeline. The Guardian reported the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the nonprofit Earth Justice urged Biden in a video to shut down DAPL. Biden has not made statements on that pipeline, but last year, when she was a senator, Vice President Kamala Harris signed an amicus brief calling on a judge to shut it down while an environmental impact study was done. DAPL is already transporting 500 million barrels of crude oil daily. Last week, 75 female indigenous leaders sent Biden a letter calling for a halt on fossil fuel projects that threaten the environment, culture, and security of Native American lands. Activists also want the administration to stop construction of Line 3, which would transport Canadian tar sands oil across indigenous lands in Minnesota. In Montana this week, the state legislature heard three bills that would continue efforts launched in 2019 to address missing and murdered indigenous people. The Cut Bank Pioneer Press reports the bills faced no opposition. One reauthorizes a task force created in 2019 and a grant that went to a tribal college to create a database of every missing indigenous person in the state. Two other bills create a commission to examine cold cases and provide training for search teams. And the Kansas City Star reports the Kansas House of Representatives is also considering a bill that would allow the Attorney General to coordinate training on murdered and missing indigenous people with tribes, the State Bureau of Investigation, and other law enforcement organizations. Advocates called it a good first step. In the Philippines, eight Catholic bishops are calling for an independent investigation into the killings of nine indigenous leaders. The Vatican News reports the military claims they were arresting members of the Communist New People's Army for alleged possession of firearms and explosives and that they resisted. But eyewitnesses say the men were unarmed and offered no resistance. The indigenous leaders were opposing the construction of a dam that would impact indigenous lands. Human rights groups say the government often labels people communists who are fighting for indigenous rights. Also in the Philippines, indigenous youths may lose a space where they have been sheltering from the military. Manga Bay reports a group of 68 indigenous students and teachers have taken refuge at the University of the Philippines in Quezon City. The campuses of the university have been off limits to military and police under a longstanding pact, but the National Defense Secretary declared an end to that pact earlier this month. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
Now. National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Utah Dene Bakea working to restore Bears Ears National Monument to 1.9 million acres with co-management by tribes. Info on supporting this effort at utahdene.org. That's UTAHDINE.org. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, joining you through Skype. You can find books by several big-name Native authors in the mainstream online outlets. But Native-owned bookstores have a commitment to carrying and promoting books the public might not find otherwise. The number of Native-owned bookstores remains small, but it's growing. A few months ago, Birdcage Bookstore and Mercantile opened up in Rapid City. There's also Massey Books in Vancouver, Birchbark Books in Minneapolis, Red Planet Books and Comics in Albuquerque, and Resistencia Books in Austin. If you know of any other Native-owned bookstores, give us a call and let us know. Coming up, we'll talk with some Indigenous bookstore owners about what it takes to compete with Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and why it's important to have Native literature available in their urban communities. You can join us, too. How important is your local independent bookstore to you? Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Rapid City, South Dakota, is Lily Mendoza. She's the owner of Birdcage Bookstore and Mercantile, and she is a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. Welcome to Native America Calling, Lily.
Thank you.
What kind of work were you doing before you opened up your bookstore to get books into the hands of folks on reservations?
You know, before I opened my bookstore, I have another business, which is called Word Carrier Trading Post, and what we did was we traveled to reservations, schools, communities, doing Native American book fairs, and we traveled all over the Northern Plains, and I did that for probably about 13 years, because I've been in the book business for quite some time, worked for different bookstores, especially big box bookstores as well. And just really kind of saw the need to provide access to literacy to reservations, communities, and children that live on the reservation.
I love that idea. When I was a kid, we had Scholastic sent home these flyers, and they had all these books you could buy. And I ambitiously would circle every single book. And then my parents would come back with, like, you could have one. So what was it like going, having the bookstore, you know, like for the kids and the fairs and things like that?
Oh, you know, it was really a wonderful experience because what would happen is a lot of the schools would allow and pay for books for the children. So they could go through just like the same concept of Scholastic, except that we had Native American books. And so they would be able to come through and pick out a book. What was really nice in one of the communities is that we were able to see how the children grew from coming to those book fairs, you know, from kindergarten all the way up through high school, and to be able to kind of see and witness how their reading improved and the books they were picking out. By the time some of these kids were in high school, they were selecting books by Vine Deloria, and taking those and reading those, you know, at home with the help, of course, with their parents. And so it really was a holistic approach to literacy that we could see happening.
Oh, I just love it. I love to read. It's one of my favorite activities to do. And I love to, you know, help other people find books that they like to read as well. So we're talking about bookstores today. If you want to get in on this conversation, what do you think of local bookstores? Where do they stand in your universe? Give us a call. Give us a shout out. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Tell us about Birdcage Bookstore in Mercantile. Lily.
Well, you know, I started out just with a very, very small studio in a building which was called an artist building, which housed Native artists, and it was also an art gallery. And I was welcomed into that space when I kind of thought about, you know, I really need to have my own bookstore now. And I started out with a very, very small studio. We look back and we kind of laugh about it because it was so small. Only two people could shop in the bookstore at one time, and I would have a line outside of the bookstore, which was, you know, we were like, man, we got to get a bit bigger bookstore. So we eventually kept on from one studio to two studios to three studios, and then of course when the pandemic hit, everything shut down. Of course, you know, so we had to make a decision. We had to make a move. And so we decided as a family that we just needed to get a bigger space. We needed to have a storefront, which was right downtown. And so that's a decision that we made as a family. And so that's where we're at right now, right in the middle of downtown here in Rapid City. And it's working out really well. I have my regular customers that come, and also, you know, non-natives that are walking by that come in, which is really important for me. You know, to know that non-natives are interested and we're helping and educate them about who we are as a people.
Yeah. You know, Rapid City, for our listeners who may not know, Rapid City is a border town, essentially. And we've done a number of shows throughout the years about tensions between non-natives and natives living in Rapid City. And I can only imagine that. How does it make you feel, Lily, to see, you know, your bookstore right there in everybody's face downtown, you know, being able to educate like that?
Sure. You know what? It feels really good to be able to have that happen. And because I'm all about community and bringing community together, I do a lot of work in that area. In fact, I do training with cultural training with our sheriff's department, police departments here in Rapid City with my son. And I use a lot of literature. And when I bring those books in, they, first of all, you know, there's all those feelings of, we didn't know that was going on. Well, yeah, you kind of did. Okay. but to encourage them to read those books and know about the history, to be able to say, come down to my bookstore, you know, see what I have. You need to learn more about your neighbor. You need to learn more about our community and our Native community. So that's, I'm here, you know, and I've had people come in here, you know, from those entities to come in. And it's good to see. And you know, we're a huge tourism city, of course, South Dakota. You know, and so I want to make sure that my inventory, my books that I have are the right kind of books for those people that are coming to South Dakota to really know the truth about our history here. And so that's a good thing for me to encourage, you know, here in our community. And it's just not about, you know, and I think some of the other bookstores that are going to be online today, too, is that we're all about making a safe space for our people to feel comfortable to come in. And 99% of the time, I know them, I know their families, and they feel comfortable here shopping.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I know that you're probably not going to find a guide to Mount Rushmore in your bookstore, but what are some of the books that you could find there?
At where?
In your bookstore.
In my bookstore, or I thought you said some other place. Okay. All right. You know what? I have, you know, probably 600 or more titles in my bookstore. And a majority of them are going to be books written by Native American authors. by authors that are local here in Rapid City, regional authors, because I really want to be able to carry those as well, some of our non-Native authors here that are local as well, and support literacy and support writers, support authors. But my main focus, of course, is to make sure that I have books written by Native authors. And much of what I carry as well, and I think I shared this before in an article, are books that I specifically have printed for Birdcage, because a lot of the books that I have are called print on demand, which really what that means is they're out of print. And so I have good relationships with some of those publishers, distributors, and I make sure that I have some of those books that you really can't find. And so, say for like American Indian Stories by C. Kalasha, this is a print-on-demand book, so it's a really hard book to find, you know. So I might have hundreds of those printed up per maybe a college might request. We need some of these books. Our instructor is going to be using this book, and so I'll have them printed up and delivered, you know, to tribal college. And so that's what I kind of make sure that I have in stock. And one of the things that I really encourage and tell people is that, you know, when you go on Amazon and you're looking for some of these book titles, because I have you know, books that I sell for $9, $19.95. Amazon has that same title for maybe $200, okay? And the reason they do that is because they can't find it. Because they're not in the business of having books printed up for them. So they will search for it, okay, when I have it readily available in my store.
Wow. That's so cool, because usually it's the other way around. You know, you go to the bookstore and you're like, I think I could get this on Amazon cheaper, but and you know, for me, that's like a no question. I try to go to the independent one first. It doesn't always work out that way with my reading demands, but it's something about being able to support local businesses. And these are local Native owned businesses. We're talking bookstores today. One of my favorite places to go to bookstores. I'm really missing hanging out in a bookstore in the pandemic. What about you? Do you have some favorite bookstores? Are they owned by Natives or maybe locally owned? Give us a call and share. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. After the break, we're going to talk with two more Native bookstore owners, and we're also going to ask them about some of their favorite books that they like to read, favorite Native authors. But your voice is welcome too. 1-800-996-2848. Speech and language disorders arise from a variety of developmental disabilities and injuries. For children, early intervention and therapy can make a positive difference. On the next Native America Calling, we'll hear about the need for more Native speech pathologists. We hope you can join us.
If you're hurting in your relationship and want to talk, Strongheart's Native Helpline is a confidential and anonymous domestic violence helpline for Native Americans available at 1-844-762-8483 or connect with a live advocate by using the Chat Now button at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer support and referrals for resources daily, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. This program supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. We're talking about business today, more specifically Native-owned bookstores. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. How important are small independent bookstores to you? We're also at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Before the break, we were talking with Lily Mendoza. She's the owner of Birdcage Bookstore and Mercantile. And Lily, I'm going to give you a chance. Anything else you want to share about your bookstore?
You know what? I just kind of feel like I'm getting to the place where, I'm a community hub for people to come in and just visit And of course, because of the pandemic, it's a really kind of a difficult for that to happen. But prior to the pandemic, that happened on a regular basis. People would just come, sit, and visit, especially when I would have Lakota elders come in and share stories. And that's really what we need in our communities, is for our elders to be available to share those stories with our community, as well support our Native Indigenous authors. And I do that by making sure that I have their books in stock. And then, hopefully down the road, we'll start doing some Zoom readings and book clubs as well. So it's just being able to support our Native writers.
I love it. You know, I was curious were you able to put anything online because of the pandemic? Or is it just, sort of limiting the amount of people that can come into the bookstore?
Well, I have a website, and as soon as the pandemic hit, the website was crazy out of control, which is good, because we had, people ordering online, and what was exciting to see is that it was almost as if there was a whole, to me, new readers that were going online and ordering Native American literature from all over the United States. As far as Hawaii. And so it was good for me to see them really actually searching the website and so that they were educating themselves about who we are, Native people, who we are. And what's interesting is that when I place those orders online, I have a relationship with that person already, just by saying, hey, I placed your order, how do you like the book? And so I'm building those kinds of relationships. With those individuals out there across the United States. So that's pretty exciting. And then, I have people that come in. I kind of watch to see that so we don't, go over the amount of people to be in my space. I require masks. And myself and usually my granddaughter will be working with me. We'll make sure, wipe everything down. All of those things so that everybody feels safe while they are in here. And I know that I've had a lot of people like, when are you going to have poetry night? When's that going to happen? And I said, well, we'll just kind of wait and see how things go. Because that's one of the things that was very, very huge when I had the other bookstore. We had poetry. We had Native poets come in, which we call Free the Bird Poetry Night. And so all of those things that I used to do over there, down the road, we'll begin to do those things again. And we'll just kind of have to wait to see what happens with COVID. And I think once we begin to do those things, just for safety, we'll limit, of course, the amount of people that can come into those events.
Yeah, it's great. Lily, what is your website?
It's www.wordcarrier.com.
We'll put a link to that on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, after the show. Let's add some more voices to the conversation. Joining us from Austin, Texas, is Lilia Rosas. She is the executive director of Red Salmon Arts, and she is Chicana India. Welcome to Native America Calling, Lilia.
Thank you. I've been enjoying listening to Lily.
Yeah. Oh, man. I just cannot emphasize this enough, how much I love bookstores. Tell me about yours.
Sure. Red Salmon Arts is our nonprofit, and housed out of Red Salmon Arts is Resistencia Books. Previously, we've also been known as Resistencia Bookstore. We've been around in one fashion or another since 1981. We were founded by Raul R. Salinas, who identified as Chica Indio. He passed away in 2008. He himself was a poet, a human rights activist, an ex-prisoner. And so when he founded Resistencia Books, he did so with that mandate that was occurring across the nation, which was to create movement bookstores to complement the growing social movements. And so in order to see what we wanted to see in terms of books and literature, he believed that bookstores were the site not only of gathering, but also a site of us basically envisioning the kinds of representations that we could control. So we are Chicano, Chicana, Chicanx, Latino, Latino, Latinx, Indigenous-centered bookstore.
What kind of books can you find on the shelves there?
Oh, my goodness. We're not comprehensive, but we are haphazard. So some of the more recent titles include Voices from the Ancestors, Our Sacred Mace in Our Mother, Is Our Mother, Dreaming in Indian. You can also find titles by Raul, because he's the one who founded it, so we always want to keep some titles for him. Basically, a lot of the books that come through have to do with the conversations and the dialogues we're having with folks. So unfortunately, with the pandemic, we've been shifting as to what those dialogues look like. So often what happens is that folks bring us their books, or they initiate a conversation and we have an event and we have a book event around that. So in the last year, it's been a year mourning, right? We've been trying to figure out how we can do these gatherings safely. So if someone came through, you can find the books there. If you want it, we always say we can always find a way to order it.
Yeah, I love that. You know, how has business been throughout the years? I guess you've been around the longest of any of our guests today. Have you seen sort of like ebbs and flows in terms of being able to keep the lights on?
You know, Raul used to always say we're always tumbling and mumbling around. it has ebbed and flowed, right? Part of, I think, of creating sites where people can gather through books is also creating an opportunity, as I think Lily so astutely pointed out, of community space, right? So sometimes we do all right, sometimes we don't. The fact that our nonprofit now is what helps us continue, has allowed us to at least sustain ourselves. You know, after Raul passed away in 2008, we weren't even sure if we could continue. So since then, and you know, it's been now, I can't believe it, 12 years since he's passed away. It's been a journey of just trying to make sure to remind folks that who you buy books from, as much as the literature you support, absolutely matters. And unfortunately, I think Amazon has done a good job of just co-opting that, you know, facilitating that, well, this is just cheaper on Amazon. So I think part of it is just having these really intentional and gentle conversations where if I tell someone, if you buy Voices from the Ancestors from us and you buy two copies, you'll probably help us with our internet bill and things along those lines.
I love it. Gentle conversations about this, as opposed to like a stern auntie, like, you better do this for us. I think that's great, Leah. Lily, what about the business of bookstores? You know, in the last couple of years, we've really seen Amazon, you know, last 10 years at least, decimating bookstores, even the big ones, Borders bookstores closed and things like that. There was a bookstore in this area in the Southwest called Hastings that also closed down. How do you sort of make the business work?
You know what? Because what I carry is so specialized, that really hasn't affected my business at all. In fact, one of the bigger bookstores here in Rapid City, you know, have come to me and asked me, geez, what are your top sellers in Native American literature? You know, and I think that that's because those of us that are Native Indigenous peoples that are in the book business, we know our literature. You know, we know, because we're invested in Indigenous writers, so we know what we need to be carrying. Okay, and then if you walk into a non-Native, you know, big bookstore, which I have, because when I go into, for example, like maybe Barnes and Nobles or Books a Million, first place I go is to see what they're carrying.
you know, as far as Indigenous literature, and there isn't much there, because usually what happens is their corporate offices order their books for them, and I know this because I've worked for one of those stores before, and any book that has Indian in it, they're going to order it, even if it's not really specific to the area in which those stores are. And so it's seldom that when I go into one of those bookstores that I really actually find something really good to read in the area of Native American literature.
Can I also just say, Lily, like, it used to irritate me so much because it used to be the only books about Natives were in the anthropology section. And you just stand there and be like, this is ridiculous. Am I in the past?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, until they have, and that was one of the things that I did, you know, I worked for Borders Bookstore years ago when it first came here to Rapid City. And that was one of the things that I was looking at is like, why don't we have books here by Joseph Marshall? Okay. Why don't we have any books here by Vine Deloria? Why don't we have any, you know, that was my question. Because it's not what they want to order because they're not going to sell them in huge quantities. Okay. So it's all about the bottom line. Right. And so that's why it's really important to me is to have a bookstore where I, you know, feature native writers, you know, I mean, otherwise how are we going to get that out into our communities and to our people? For me, when a family comes in here and they can see their relative, on the cover of a book, that's amazing to see their reaction to that because they can page through it and they can say, oh, this, and they do that. This is my uncle and this is my grandpa. And then they start telling stories. Okay. So having these small independent bookstores is really, really a healthy, spiritual, good thing for our peoples.
Absolutely. I want to throw this out there to our listeners. If you were going to open up your own bookstore, your own Native bookstore, what titles would you put on your shelves right away? For me, I think what authors would you make sure that you would have? So I would definitely put all of Vine Deloria's books on the shelves. I really like Cynthia Lytic Smith, her young adult novels. I would put those up on the shelves. My great-great-grandmother wrote a book called Witness. I would put that on the shelves for sure. There'd be about 4,500 copies for everyone to get one. What about you? Call us and share. What would you put in your fantasy Native bookstore? The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to add one more voice to the conversation. Joining us from Albuquerque is Dr. Lee Francis IV. He's the owner of Red Planet Books and Comics and CEO and publisher of Native Realities, and he is from the Pueblo of Laguna. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Lee.
Guati, and thank you. I'm so glad to be back with all of these wonderful luminaries. This is so fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, you actually got to do that sort of fantasy plan when you started your bookstore. Tell us about it, the birth of Red Planet.
Well, interestingly enough, I feel like it follows, you know, Lily's line in some way. You know, and Lily and I had the chance, I felt like very much like out to sea when I was just like, how did I not know? Like, I just had the chance to introduce myself to her like this last month. I was like, how did I not know about your stuff? Like, this is so exciting. So I started a publishing company back in 2014, publishing Native comics. We wanted to put out comic books by, for, and about Native folks. And then we launched Indigenous Comic-Con, which I have been on the show for several times. And then a year after that, we opened Red Planet Books and Comics, is the only Native comic shop in the world, right? So our focus is on collecting, cultivating as much of the Native comic book part that we can, as well as meeting the needs of all the indigenerds out there. So we do carry other comics, but our main focus really is comics by people of color, especially our own communities or Dihina communities, indigenous communities, you know, Chicano-Chicana communities, and African-American, because we want, you know, a lot of those synthesis between all of our folks, you know, comes out in the illustration. So yeah, so that's the weird and winding road. And here we are here in 2021, 4 years later at this point.
Lee, what kind of adjustments have you had to make because of the pandemic?
Well, kind of everybody was saying, I mean, we've all encountered very similar things. We here in Albuquerque, we went on, everything was really shut down in March. And I think fortunately we had been in kind of on sporadic hours coming out of the winter because we were having some heating issues. So we weren't able to be open like full time until we were trying to solve some of the heating problems. And then all of a sudden we kind of rolled into March and it was like, well, I guess we'll just not open the doors. I'm like, I don't know, what to do. So, but it took a moment to kind of think about how are we going to re-envision what we're doing now? What are we doing in terms of making sure that we're getting comics, getting these books out our other wonderful guests have said, like that we carry things that you can't find anywhere else. So really just kind of put it out there and we started, wanted to continue to support Native creatives and all of these great illustrators we work with and really put that into the world. June, we opened back up again to limited traffic based on the COVID limitations for the city of Albuquerque. So we sort of reoriented our store and made it kind of just a little bit smaller in the front. So, we don't have a lot of traffic that comes through, but, the traffic that does comes through to buy comics, which is great. I think Albuquerque has an incredible comic book scene. It's wild, right? The number of comic shops we have in this town for the population.
Hang on, Lee. We're going to go to a short break. I want to talk more about also some of the things that you've done to transition to selling things online as well, which, it makes me a little sad, but also happy to be able to know that bookstores can reach other people across the country. We're going to go to a short break. We'll be right back. Bookstores.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working with tribal communities across the nation to address the opioid crisis. Breaking the cycle starts with preventing opioid misuse, treating opioid use disorder with medications and counseling, and recovery support during all phases of recovery. If you or a loved one is challenged by opioid use disorder, you can find additional information at aaip.org.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Terry Gatewood. We're talking with a couple of Native bookstore owners today. There's still time to join the conversation. If you have questions or comments for them about their business, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to the phones. We've got Melvin in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Hey there, Melvin.
Yes, good morning. If I was going to start a bookstore, I would like to see the Water Lily and Black Elk Speaks and all of Vine's books. And my favorite bookstore is Birch Park up in Minneapolis. I go up there and visit my daughter who was in high school and worked there. So I got to go over there and just see all this inventory that this lady had at her bookstore, all in Indians, and I just thought it was so great. And to see those young Indian ladies working there was nice to see, too. And the Red Salmon, I knew Raul Salinas. He was a good friend of mine. We're allies from the 70s until he passed, and he was a great man, and he loved his books. So I hope to get down there to the Red Salmon at some time.
Thanks, Melvin. I'd like to visit it as well. Lilia Rosas is with us. She's the executive director of Red Salmon Arts. And Lilia, thinking about this sort of fantasy idea of filling up your favorite bookstore, if you had unlimited funds, how big do you think that your bookstore would be? How would you expand it?
Oh, my goodness. That's a beautiful question. In the last few years, we've had to move several times, right? So each time we've had to kind of fight for the space we have. So at this point, I think just whatever you can imagine that we should have, we should have. I mean, just thinking about just the tremendous work that Vine Deloria set up for us. I just keep going back to the work of Roxandra Bar-Ortiz. I mean, easily we should have 1,000 titles, right? Which shouldn't exist in the anthropology section ever. You know. So, and I do not know why, as Indigenous folks, we're constantly being reduced to these disciplines that aren't even representative of our stories. So I want to be dumbfounded by the titles that everyone can suggest and I can think of is my goal.
I love it. Lily, let's go to you on this question of, you know, if you had unlimited funds, unlimited space. I have to say, I'm going to add one more thing to my fantasy bookstore, which would be a recording studio inside the bookstore. So people could come in and read their books, and then end up putting them on, well, we used to call it books on tape, but I'm dating myself here, but, you know, being able to listen to books is so important as well. So what about you, Lily?
Well, you know, I have to say, I do have those titles in my store, like Black Hawk Speaks, Water Lily, American Indian Stories. I have a lot of those books because, you know, I've been in the book business for 20 years, and coming into the area of, you know, selling books, I come from a family that are readers. I come from, you know, my sisters are English teachers, and I have a sister who has her doctorate in the area of, you know, literacy. And so I had the knowledge of Indigenous and Native American writers coming into this circle. You know, so for me right now is to make sure that I have and carry contemporary writers as well. That's really important because we have some contemporary writers, you know, like Nick Estes. He wrote the book Our History is a Future. He is said to be and known to a lot in the literary world as the next Vine Deloria. Okay. And if you read his books, he sure is. They're right in saying that, you know. One of our other poets, Layli Long Soldier. You know, her book as well. Oh my goodness, I can't remember his name, but what is this? Where? No, what is it? Is it Orange? Is it Tommy Orange?
Tommy Orange. Know, they're there.
Right? Yeah, they're there. Okay. So my dream in the future here, and currently my dream, is to make sure that I have in my store those up-and-coming Native writers. So that young people have access to those authors, you know, in addition to making sure that those young people that come in here, they not only are reading those books, but they're also becoming familiar and being introduced to, you know, Vine Deloria, Leslie Sokol. I have a whole area, dedicated to Louise Erdrich. And so that's really important for me, too, so that they're learning about those people, and especially Vine, you know. He's no longer with us. That doesn't mean that we can't remember him through literacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a call. If you still want to get in on the conversation, we're opening up fantasy bookstores and talking with actual Native bookstore owners today. Call us. There's still time. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to Ray in Spokane, Washington, tuned in on KPBZ. Hey there, Ray.
Hi, Monica. Yes,
hi.
I'd like to ask a question if any of the listeners out there ever remember a fellow named Ken McRae. He bought a bank building in Enumclaw, Washington, and he had the largest collection of Mary LaLuska family little people And in the back of his bank building, he had a 45-foot totem pole erected in the back of the bank building there. And I used to help him move his books around when he'd go here and there selling his books, you know. And his store was also a record store. He was such an interesting fellow. He had the collections of basketry and like I say, the Liliska family's collection of the little people, which are miniature, they're like dolls, but they're realistic. And they had the little old grandma cutting the salmon and this and that and hunting scenes and everything. It was just wonderful to know that man. And I was just wondering if anybody remembered his bookstore, because he was such a, he loved the Native America beautiful things that they made. And he had the biggest collection of a lot of things. His bank was temperature controlled in all those different vaults so that they were preserved, you know, in the right way. So anyway, that's all I had to say. And I appreciate your calls. I listen to you all the time and love your show.
Thanks, Ray. It's great to hear from you. Lily, have you heard of this bookstore in Washington? And if not, you know, did you travel around to some other bookstores before you opened up yours just to sort of get an idea of what you wanted, some other Native bookstores?
You know what? I haven't heard of that bookstore. But you know what? The only bookstore that I really went and to visit because I was up in Minneapolis would be Birch Bark, you know. I think because of distance, as I'm hearing the other bookstores, it's like we're all far apart from each other. I didn't have the opportunity to visit other bookstores, but having worked in bookstores before, I was able to learn about what bookstores, especially if I was going to open, what really needed to be in those stores, you know? Kind of getting back to the thing where, you know, bookstores will order. As long as they had the name Indian or Native in it, they would order it. Had nothing to do with anything, really. So that was really my wanting to support Native literacy is making sure we had the right books, you know, in my bookstore, okay? That's how I, you know, put my bookstore together. And I was very, very lucky to be able to work with a wholesale business here in Rapid City that was able to, visit with him and say, can I set up a 60-day net with you so that I can start my store? And he said, yes, you can. He was very supportive. And so to be honest with you, I didn't really have any startup money to start my business at all. Mm. And so I was very fortunate, you know, to be able to do that, and then hurry up and make the money then to pay for my books, you know. But isn't that how we do? Isn't that how we do as Native people, Indigenous people?
Lee was running his bookstore with no heat. So I can't think of anything. Actually, let's go to Lee. Lee, you want to get in on this? If you had unlimited funds, what your bookstore would look like?
Oh, that's such a great question. I mean, I grew up in, you know, it's there's these great sort of like bookstore comic shop places. It's Austin Books and Comics out of Austin, Texas. That has been like, I love that space. Like, it's just walls and walls and shelves of comics. I would like to have all the money in the world, put all the Native comic artists to work to fill all those shelves, right? Like, to have a 60,000 square foot space that's just filled with books and games and toys and collectibles and comics that are all representative of who we are. I mean, that's like the big dream. That's 50 years down the road, right? I mean, like right now, if we had just like a whole bunch of money right now, really to expand and to connect with all of these wonderful bookstores, all of us, we're such a small group and we're so far apart, to connect up, say like, what do you have that we don't have? Let me carry that. What do you have that we don't have? Help, you know, let me carry that. What can we put in here? What can we do to create this amazing network of all of us doing this incredible work. I think that's, you know, that's like my first goal. Like once I get all the monies, that's my first gig is how do we create this network so that we can share and tell all our stories to one another through this wonderful thing of books and literature.
You know, this is one part of the conversation that we really haven't gotten into too much, which is that if the publishers won't publish the books, you know, you can, luckily there's self-publishing and things like that, but it's a tremendous expense. And so we really need to have the whole pipeline supported in terms of that. And talk to us about how you support that pipeline, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that coming from education, it was very interesting because you'd see that like all of us in Native communities, we develop these great curricula, but then we get stopped, right? Because the state would be like, well, you can't do that except at your one school. And then we got the state to accept a lot of this stuff. And then they'd be like, okay, but then the testing, like kids are not tested that way. So there's no buy-in. So for me, I looked at it in the same way. I was like, we're doing all of this incredible creative work, all of these Native, you know, illustrators and writers and indigenous illustrators and writers and creatives that are building our own literary base for ourselves by, for, and about Native folks in these spaces. You know, it gets to this place where it's just like, well, then, but where does it go? Because right now the environment is positive for Native people to be able to get more work out there, these contemporary Native artists. But there have been multiple times in the last 20, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years where it's not been conducive, where the industry is like, oh, yeah, we can't really sell that anymore. And so what I look at is saying with all of us in this work as booksellers, we're the front line, we're the last line. I don't know where you want to put us, but we're where the books get to the people. And so that is part of creating that through line of saying from creation to the hands of not only our communities, but all the communities to, you know, that we're trying to draw that line. We're the ones that have been doing the book fairs and going out and get in front of the folks and doing the small publications or the big publications and putting the money into those spaces. Cause you're not seeing that. Well, you haven't, it's changing slightly, but you haven't been seeing that for quite some time. And I don't want to let it go back. Like, I don't want, you know, one step forward, two steps back type of thing. I want it like eight steps forward, you know, and we just keep going. So I think the more that us as booksellers, as independent local indigenous booksellers can get more of the work into the hands of not only our communities locally, but our communities nationally, our communities globally, and all the other people that want to see just some incredible stories, philosophies, et cetera. That's the beauty of the work. That's the sales ship. That's kind of what we have to put into this space. So I think that's part of, you know, that through line, that waterway becomes so critical, because if we're not making the resources, if the money's not being made, the major publishers are not going to be as interested, right? Because they'll move on to something that's going to bring in the dollars. So we need to make our own dollars for our own people and support our own institutions and support each other so that we can create our own, you know, sovereign literary economics.
Lee Francis, the Stan Lee of Indian country when it comes to comics. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. It's always great to hear. Hey, how can folks, you know, connect if they can't make it over to the store?
Find us online, www.redplanetbooksncomics.com. That's the best place to find us for all our information and a great assortment of cool stuff.
Thank you so much to all of our guests today, Lilia Rosas, Lily Mendoza, and of course, Lee Francis. Join us next week for another lineup of discussions about Native American issues and topics. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our host is Tara Gatewood. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Marino Spencer is the engineer. Nola Daves Moses is the distribution director. And Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our resource development specialist. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief of operations, and the president and CEO of Kwanic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good weekend.
Support by Utah Dene Bekea, working to fully restore Bears Ears National Monument by asking the Biden administration to fulfill the original vision of protection for 1.9 million acres with meaningful co-management by tribes. It's time we respect ancestral lands and our collective American heritage by listening to and learning from tribes on stewardships of these cultural landscapes. Info on supporting this effort at utahdene.org. That's UTAHDINE.org.
Gugtas, do you have a health goal for 2021? Now is the perfect time to try something new and exciting to make your health a priority. Contact your local Indian health care provider for more information. Visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.